basically, I am motivated not so much, like you said, by the, is there a ghost, yes or no? But I'm more motivated by, if the answer is yes, then what does that mean for us as the living? What do we do with that information? And how do we grow and better ourselves and those around us? Like, because I'm also very community focused in my day-to-day life. And like, I want to make living life better for everyone.
Welcome to The Outer Known, a podcast that shines a light on the outer edges of inner knowing.
Hi, Jackie.
Hey, Lane.
I'm so looking forward to today's episode.
It is so, so good. And I have to say, I was fangirling and like in my feelings when this guest agreed to be on the show, because ever since our conversation with Connor a couple seasons ago, I have been really fascinated by paranormal investigation times 10. And I had been kind of looking into the universe of women-identified paranormal investigators. And I happened upon this publication, essay series, poetry series, sort of wonderful hodgepodge of literary and artistic goodness called The Feminine Macabre. And I was sort of looking through who their contributors were. And lo and behold, I found this wonderful person, Amanda Paulson, who is based in Spokane and has been doing paranormal investigation for some time, and started following her on Instagram. And just, wow, what an amazing person. And I was secretly putting the vibes out into the universe that she would agree to be on the podcast. And the timing worked out. She is joining us for today's episode.
Amanda is just so cool on so many levels, but chatting with her, it was absolutely fascinating to get into kind of the deeper experience of what it's like to be in haunted places. And I also love her sort of expansive definition of what a paranormal experience can be. Mm-hmm. And don't worry, listeners, we're about to get into that.
Yeah, I also will just say two things before we get into our conversation. One, she has a very specific kind of approach to the way that she does her paranormal investigations and sort of this larger universe of those kinds of experiences. Also, she helped work on a documentary film about a very particular kind of paranormal experience on the Olympic Peninsula, which she'll talk more about, but just wanted to put a plug in there that she's now added filmmaker to her resume. So yes, she's a very cool person, has some really wonderful stories and theories, and we're so excited to share that with you.
For sure. And so excited to see her film, and we'll definitely be sharing more as that's ready for release.
All right, let's get to our conversation with Amanda. Amanda, thank you so much for being on The Outer Known.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We are so, so excited to have you. I know I can speak for Lane in saying that paranormal investigation is something that we're both super fascinated by, and we're just really excited to talk to more folks in that universe. So thank you so much for agreeing to chat with us.
Yay.
So in addition to being a paranormal investigator, you're a writer, you're a medium, and most recently, you're a documentary filmmaker. So tell us a little bit about where you started. How did you become interested in paranormal activity? Was there like a specific experience you had?
Yeah, I started having paranormal experiences when I was only 7 years old, when I lived in Billings, Montana. The paranormal activity was all within what I call a haunted duplex that I lived in with my mom and my grandma. And I was very scared of it at the time. But once we moved out of that duplex, the paranormal activity followed me basically anywhere else I would go, kind of making me think, maybe it's not the house that's haunted. Maybe it's me. So when I turned 18, I joined my first paranormal investigating group. This was 2008. So if you can imagine early ghost hunters, ghost adventures age of ghost hunting, that's when I got my start in learning how to ghost hunt. And then it wasn't until 2019 that I started my blog, Pretty Effin' Spooky. And then here we are today.
I love the name of your blog. Is there like a story behind that? Or is that kind of like just something you say often?
There is a story behind it, actually. Back in 2019, when I started contemplating starting a blog, I thought of the name when I was at a thrift store and we were going down that creepy aisle that has just like random doodads and dolls and stuff. And I kept saying to my boyfriend, I was like, that's pretty freaking spooky. And it just kind of rolled off from there. And then I didn't want to use frickin'. I don't know why, but it just sounded dorky. And then I didn't want to use the real word because I was like, well, no one's going to want to say that if this ever goes anywhere. So then we landed on effin', and yeah, pretty effin' spooky.
I love that. So speaking of thrift shopping, we hear that you have recently bought a pair of shoes that you think might be haunted. Tell us about that.
Yes, my new endeavor is haunted shoes. I actually picked up this pair of shoes. They're really cute. They're these cute little heeled boots, vintage, that I got. And I started recognizing that I was stepping differently. But most importantly, I realized that my gait had changed. I was kind of carrying myself a little bit differently and I felt taller. And I thrift all the time. It's like half of my closet. And I had never actually felt like I was not a different person, but just felt a little bit different, you know, and that's how I feel in these boots. And so I started contemplating the idea that they might be haunted. And I don't know why I had never thought of this before. I mean, when you think about it, it's kind of like, duh. I mean, if objects can be haunted, any object can be haunted, and especially clothes. They're so close to our body. I don't know. I would imagine they imprint our energy onto them, especially shoes. But yeah, it took me by surprise. I was like, huh, we might be onto something here.
I hear a cat.
I know. My cat was like, what are you doing? That's Henry.
Speaking of haunted shoes, no, I'm kidding.
Those are my haunted shoes walking down the hall right now. No, I wish.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I hope.
When did you first realize that you were a medium?
Oh, the medium conversation is interesting because this is a new development for me and something that I'm really passionate about talking about. But I, for a long time, did not believe I had any mediumship abilities. And also, as I said before, I started ghost hunting in 2008. And that was a time when it was really popular, really common to see people taking a more, quote, scientific approach to ghost hunting, where it was really equipment heavy. It was really like the main goal was to find irrefutable proof for skeptics to show them like, this is ghosts. And I was really in that same line of thought for a long time in my life and didn't dig into the more intuitive side. I would consider myself a spiritual person throughout my life, but I never really dug into anything to do with mediumship and just believed I wasn't naturally a medium. I didn't see ghosts walking around and I thought that that was the only way that it could happen. Mm. But in the last few years, especially since I started filming the documentary that I had filmed recently, I started kind of focusing more on my intuitive abilities and kind of forcing myself to remove the equipment out of the equation and just sit and listen and see what happens and kind of experiment with that. And I started to learn how to enter a trance state easier. And I started realizing that this was something that came naturally to me and something that I could dig into and kind of take a journey and kind of find things through that journey. And furthermore, I realized that I was able to do that journey in the subconscious of the living, not the dead. So these mediumship abilities, for lack of a better word, I mean, a mediumship is mediumship, but like it ended up kind of coming out of me more in the sense of reading intuitively the living. But when I would journey through the living subconscious, sometimes the dead would show up. Sometimes people that wanted to reach out would show up if there was a strong enough connection there. And then I've since kind of elaborated on that, experimented with it, and have been able to find myself entering that state easier. And now it's something that I can kind of work with on my investigation. So now I proudly call myself a psychic medium. I do it for fun for people online. I don't charge for it, but it's just something that I feel like is bringing me closer to the other side mm-hmm. and makes me feel more fulfilled and makes me feel like I can actually give back to my paranormal community in a better way than I found myself solely searching for proof of ghosts.
Mm. I think that's something I really appreciate about your approach to paranormal investigation. Like, we've interviewed another investigator and I've followed a bunch of other folks, and there's more of commercialness, for lack of a better word, like you said, that kind of scientific drive to find proof. But also I feel like it's more about, okay, is there a ghost here? Yes or no? But I feel like your approach is way deeper than that. And particularly this concept that you've developed called the paranormal emotive touch point. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that? Because I think that gets at, that's like a deeper level of something. And I'm really like fascinated by this idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started developing the paranormal emotive touchpoint theory in, I think it was 2021, again, on this journey that I took filming this documentary out of the Olympic Peninsula. A lot of transformation happened at this time. Also 2020, 2021, we all know what was going on in the world at the time. And we were getting deep and like, you know, a lot of realizations happening. But basically, I am motivated not so much, like you said, by the, is there a ghost, yes or no? But I'm more motivated by, if the answer is yes, then what does that mean for us as the living? Mm-hmm. What do we do with that information? And how do we grow and better ourselves and those around us? Like, because I'm also very community focused in my day-to-day life. And like, I want to make living life better for everyone. So I started kind of playing around with how I could feel more fulfilled in that way. But then also I started noticing that there was a correlation between paranormal phenomena and emotions, specifically what I call odd emotions, which are things as I define them, like deja vu, liminality, nostalgia, synchronicity. I know these aren't necessarily emotions, but just for to simplify it, these kind of like weird things that happen, these weird feelings, these weird stages that we go through in life. It seemed like there was some kind of correlation there between that and paranormal phenomena. And I started kind of investigating these touch points or these soft spots in the world that I was finding where I was feeling deja vu or I was feeling nostalgic or the area felt liminal. Say I'm in a abandoned Sears outlet and I'm like, this feels super creepy. What if I sat here and investigated this feeling? What if I sat here and like talked to the feeling itself as if it was a ghost or just tried to reach out to the other side in general? Do I have a closer, clearer connection with it? And I started to find that I was very much onto something, that paranormal phenomena surfaced easier when I would pay attention to these emotions or these emotive touch points that I was coming across. And they didn't necessarily have to have a traditional haunted background to them. It didn't necessarily have to be that something tragic happened there or that there was a deceased person's spirit there that needed to do one thing or the other. It just simply felt odd. And I just went on that track that like possibly that's a kind of a line like reaching out to us from the other side or kind of like a reverberation of something that we could kind of touch it like a radio button to a clear signal or something like that. And that's how the paranormal emotive touch point was bred. And now I've been writing this month, actually in June, I'm writing a blog post every day of June on prettyeffinspooky.com, but I'm really digging into the specifics of how to investigate nostalgia, how to investigate liminality, you know, like getting into exactly how to investigate these paranormal emotive touch points with the tools and the methods that we have as traditional ghost hunters.
So cool.
Yeah.
I'm blown away by that. And I'm at just a moment of gratitude for offering that to the world because, yeah, I think so many of us are basically because society sort of trains us to think that way, that we intellectualize things and we doubt our own intuitive abilities and the emotions that come up as not really being useful. And I really appreciate you making that connection.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been kind of been a hard road, honestly, to learn how to articulate a concept like that and to weed through. And inherently, in order to make a theory that is based entirely on human emotion, I've had to dig really deep into myself. And I don't know, so basically face some things about myself that were incredibly difficult. And I don't even want to say I'm on the other end of it. I'm just like perpetually liminal with when it comes to that, as we all are, you know, like I'm just trying to figure out how to live life. But like, I'm trying to push this idea forward for, again, the sake of the paranormal community and hoping that I can help in some way the living. Mm-hmm. Like there's just already enough focus on the dead in this community. And that's great. Everyone has value in some way or another. But I felt like a spot to fill there with focusing on the people that were actually called to searching for this stuff or, you know, interested in it. And like, what do we have to do with it all? How do we play a part in it? Which I think is a really big part.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious, throughout this like mediumship and intuitive exploration and communication, what have you learned in terms of how or why spirits are trying to communicate with us?
My answer, I don't think is going to agree with it. I don't think everyone's going to agree with it, and that's totally fine. It's my answer is simply here to just maybe help people think about it in a different way. Mm-hmm. But the more I've searched, the more I've realized that I don't necessarily believe that the paranormal, or rather ghosts, are reaching out to us for a specific reason often, but more that our subconscious or whatever makes us tick, our spirit, whatever you want to call it, is reaching out the other way, that there is something, like it is a part of our kind of spiritual journey, or again, whatever you want to call it. Like, I think it's 50-50, and that not always is the other side reaching out for unfinished business. It's not always the dead person hypothesis, which is, you know, that there is always unfinished business or something that they need to do, mm-hmm. but rather that they almost serve a purpose for us. And like, it, and this also kind of gets into, I'm not going to go down too much of a rabbit hole, but it kind of gets into also the fact that we all have our own specific lens and see things. Like, we don't know how other people are perceiving things. We're only perceiving things the way that we see it. So I think that things appear to us a certain way at a certain time for a certain reason. So I don't know. And I'm still working through that too.
Yeah.
Because that could change in a minute. A ghost could come up to me and be like, hey man, I need help moving on to the other side. And I'm going to be like, oh crap, I'm going to change my mind about everything. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the point. Like, I mean, if you're not willing to like be open to new information, you know, like, but
definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's like, we have more to do with it than them. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to me, and much more so than like the, oh, there's a reason for everything. It's like urgent for some unfinished business sort of concept. It almost seems like there's just like layers there or something. And mm-hmm. and I think that's why I'm also very curious about how you refer to the other side and what that kind of means to you.
The other side for me is like encapsulates all phenomenon. So I would consider it to be all the weird things like UFOs. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about all this stuff, but it kind of, it's everything. And the other side is what I can't perceive here with my own eyes, like in my day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. So it's like everything. It's even magic. It's my spiritual practice. It's everything other than what is like here today in front of my face. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I love these questions that they're pushing me in a good way. So I like it.
What's the most interesting spirit you've encountered, or what's the most memorable paranormal investigation you've done?
The most interesting spirit and most memorable definitely has to be Holly Illingworth out of Lake Crescent, which is where the documentary I have coming out soon, Death Is With Me, was filmed out of. And it was the longest time I ever spent, 2 years investigating one specific entity.
Wow.
And I won't get into the details because I'll leave it on a cliffhanger so people go see my documentary. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't exactly how I would have expected it to be. It's much different than you would think. But I did end up getting very close to the spirit, or potentially the egregore of Holly Illingworth, and the legend and lore of the Lady of the Lake and similar archetypes like that. So yeah, absolutely the most interesting spirit I've ever come in contact with is Holly.
Mm. And what drew you to her in the first place? Like, how did you get interested in her as a subject?
So I'm not the director of the documentary I just did recently. It was a director, Ryan Grulett, out of Seattle. Mm-hmm. And he actually had a very meaningful experience out on Lake Crescent that drew him to Holly Illingworth. And then he decided to make this documentary about her story and about the paranormal claims based out of Lake Crescent. And he reached out to me, since I'm also in Washington, and asked me if I wanted to do the project with him. So she found me. I definitely did not find her first. And I wouldn't even say that I was a completely different person, especially as a paranormal investigator, when he reached out in September 2020. And I looked at her as definitely more of just a flat ghost, like a boo, like, you know, like whatever. I was just like, oh, well, yes, I'll investigate this ghost. Like, I didn't think much of it. And that's where I kind of feel like, again, like the serendipity or synchronicity of it, or not synchronicity, serendipity is a better word, of like her showing up to me for a specific reason. Not that the world revolves around me. I'm like eating my own words. I'm like, everything comes to me because I need it. No, but we all found each other for a reason, and it really stuck with me. So yeah.
If it's not giving anything away, what would you say was the biggest transformation that you experienced from that?
Well, the biggest transformation would definitely be the things I'm talking to you guys about today. I'm only a few years into really expanding my view on the paranormal. I had been sort of inching towards it in like 2017, 2018, 2019, but this project really pushed me and led me to experience the other side, all the other stuff that I hadn't experienced before. Like I said, we spent time on the Olympic Peninsula, and anyone who's been there knows how primordial and ancient it feels out there and how different it feels. Mm-hmm. That it was the first time I ever went somewhere. It honestly humbled me to be in the woods there, to be somewhere where I felt especially like a guest, like I was a guest to this other energy that I couldn't put a name to. And it just immediately opened up my view of what I thought a ghost was. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And it was really just, yeah, the experiences I had out there just changed everything. And those experiences you'll have to watch in the documentary.
Yeah. Amazing.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
So for that documentary, can you tell us, do you have kind of a release date or anything like that?
So we did just premiere out in Seattle recently, and we also did a small showing in Spokane. And we just released that we're having a showing down in Orange County, California. And so we're doing one more showing in California. And then I know that right now they're in the process of working with the distributor to get it to a streaming platform. So I don't have a release date yet, but the idea is that it'll be available, I'm hoping, by the end of the year.
Nice.
These things take a long time. And I know that they're working really hard to find, they said themselves, they're not worried about money, but they just want to find the best way to have the most eyes on it. Mm-hmm. Cause it does have a lot of important messages in there as well that they just want people to see. And it's a passion project for all of us now. So hopefully they'll get it distributed to a platform that a lot of people have access to by the end of the year.
Very exciting. Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking a little bit about the Pacific Northwest and different areas you've checked out and visited. What's the most haunted place that you've visited?
The most haunted place is, it's got to be, if not the Olympic Peninsula, because I already said that, so I'm not going to say that again, but it's got to be the Lizzie Borden house, which everyone always rolls their eyes at this when I say it. I know the Lizzie Borden house has been commodified beyond belief. And honestly, I don't even know what energy is there anymore. It's probably just a bunch of ghost hunter energy that's really wacky. But I got to stay in the Lizzie Borden house back in 2021, and it was right before the new ownership that they had. It was actually right in between, and it was on Easter. So I stayed in the Lizzie Borden house alone on accident. Like, I didn't rent it out. I don't have that kind of money, to be honest. And I stayed there alone. I got given a tour by the tour guide, like a 2-hour long tour by a really sweet man who told me he didn't know if he was going to have a job after this because they had just sold it. Aww. And I know, bless his heart. I hope he is somewhere, not there, because I've heard some things about Lizzie Borden's house now, but I hope he's doing well. He told me that there was nobody else there. And I believe him because he showed me every inch of the house, and there was only one door that he didn't open, which I imagine was storage, and it'd be really wild if there was somebody hiding in that room, but I don't know. And he even said that there wasn't anyone on the property at all. I asked if I could buy some merch and a shirt, and he said, oh, the lady will be back at 10 in the morning if you want anything from her. And I just had the house to myself, and that night was the most active night of my life. And I don't know that it was solely because anyone related to the Lizzie Borden house was necessarily there with me, but I also was just in a really different headspace. Honestly, I was extremely sleep deprived. I had been to the Conjuring house the night before, and I'd gotten like no sleep. I had went to the Bridgewater Triangle that day, which is really notorious for supernatural phenomenon, and had a weird day out there. And then the Lizzie Borden house, it's filled with crime scene photos. It's filled with creepy mannequins. I'm alone across the country. You know, there was so many different aspects of this that were psychologically testing me that I believe it was like the perfect recipe for just absolute terrifying night. And I heard somebody walking around all night, even in the room, like around the bed and near the armoire. And I heard a voice. I saw these little prickly lights everywhere, which I don't know if I was just absolutely like so sleep deprived, possibly. I don't know the science behind that, but I just saw some crazy stuff and was so scared I actually didn't even investigate it really. I sat on the bed for 3 hours on live doing nothing. Just scared on live because that was better than my own thoughts or being alone, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, by far the scariest place I've been. And I don't know that anywhere has really surpassed that yet. I have stayed at some places down in North Carolina, in Appalachia, and it's really wild out there too. It's really cool down there. And that's got a similar vibe to the Olympic Peninsula. So I'd say that's a close second, but yeah.
I'm from North Carolina originally, a little bit of an hour away from the mountains, and grew up with a lot of those ghost stories and Brown Mountain Lights and all that kind of stuff. So it's always fascinated me, that area. Mm-hmm. Like, what are some of the areas there that you would point out to people as super haunted?
the places that I've been that were super haunted are now no longer public. Oh. So I shouldn't have said it. I'm sorry. Wah, wah. Boo. Tomato, tomato.
All good. Okay.
But my friend Shelby, she owns the company Tamed Wild, which is like a witchy online company. And she has a house that was a bed and breakfast down in Hendersonville, mm-hmm. right outside of Asheville. And that place is very haunted. And some of the wildest activity I've ever had. And like saw like a little boy poke his head out of the underneath a table and saw a shadow. I don't know, just really wild stuff. And she actually just reached out to me this week to tell me she's been having dreams. I hope she doesn't mind me telling this, but she had a dream that a council that lives in the basement of the inn, the council came to her to tell her that they had 24 tasks that she needed to complete before she woke up. And that she told them that she was too tired and she wasn't able to do them. And there were 12 council members. So very interesting, like 12 months in the day, 24 hours in the, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Some very like symbolic stuff there. But anyway, that place is wild. And then she also has some property closer to the what is the mountains over there? I don't know. Closer to like an entrance of like, I think a national park or something, but more in the mountains. And one of the cabins is haunted by a man who lived out there. And then the woods in general are just creepy.
Wow.
Probably a paranormal motive touch point out there somewhere. But yeah.
Fascinating.
I love it down there though. I would love to live in like Asheville, North Carolina. I mean, I love Washington though for like a lot of reasons. I love the Pacific Northwest, but North Carolina is beautiful.
There's a lot of interesting connections between the two areas, Pacific Northwest and the Appalachians in particular. I grew up going to Asheville a lot, so I totally know what you mean about the vibe of that area. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a lot of different like senses and your experiences with spirits. And I'm curious, you know, you mentioned you saw a little boy. So like, what is that actually like? Is it like seeing another person sitting in the room with you? Or is it like almost like a layer of a reality? Like what's kind of your experience of that?
I love talking about this because I want people to know, like paranormal enthusiasts to know, that it does not have to be like a solid human being for it to be valid, mm-hmm. for it to be like an actual experience that you had. For me, it's like an intrusive thought, almost like a image that just pops up in my head. It's taken a lot of time and a lot of reflection to understand what is truly just a random thought. Like if I'm seeing like a TV character that I saw earlier in the day or something in my brain, I've got to kind of weed through it and be like, what's reality here? Like what's actually going on? But there are times when I see things that are so out of the ordinary, out of what I expected, that the only explanation is paranormal. In this house, I had two different experiences with this. There was one shadow figure that I saw that was definitely outside of my body. Like it was an actual, it looked like somebody had passed behind me and the shadow was reflecting on the wall, but the shadow was like in front of me, not broken. So like that and very quick. And I've also seen other shadow figures like that. You hear that term a lot in ghost hunting, but there's something to it. Shadow figures seem to be the one thing that I see that seems very tangible, or I don't know, like in my reality. But the little boy poking his head out from underneath the table was when I was doing an Estes method, which is like a sensory isolation experiment with headphones and a blindfold on and listening to a spirit box. I was doing it with somebody on Zoom, and I was trying to do my thing with the blindfold on and in my head, and my body felt the sensation of somebody being there. Like where it feels like somebody's too close to you. But in my head, I saw him. So that was more of an impression inside of my head, but the shadow was more actually there, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So all of those are valid. If anyone experiences any of those, you don't have to see, like some old timey person doesn't need to walk up to you and like, be like, hi, I'm a ghost. It doesn't need to be like that. I thought that for a long time. I really believed that I was like less than with other people in the field because I couldn't see that. I was like, I've never seen that. And it took me a while to realize that like it doesn't have to be like that.
I've had some experience of that nature as well, and it's less so the shadows and more so like, I like that you framed it as an intrusive thought. It's like, it's not something that you're like a normal passing thought. It's something that like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to put it other than like comes to you, enters your mind. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely understand what you're saying there. Very interesting. And you have mentioned though as well, like you hear some sounds like footsteps. Is that also slightly different, or does it sound more like a real footstep?
If I'm talking publicly about footstep sounds, they are literal footsteps.
Yeah.
Like disembodied footsteps. Yeah. That's not one of my personal like gifts is clairaudience.
Yeah.
Thank you. But that's not one of my personal gifts. I don't hear things like that. I know other people do. But for me, the footsteps I've heard have been literal footsteps, which are really fascinating to me. I actually think footsteps are a really compelling, fascinating paranormal experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's like really unexplainable. You know, we know what house creaking sounds like, but to hear, you know, like the boots on the ground footsteps, then be looking in the area of that and see absolutely nothing is a wild experience.
I think actually for me, the sound is what would freak me out the most. Like if I heard footsteps and nobody else was around, I would be out the door. So how do you handle like those feelings? Do you feel like scared? Do you ever feel like running? Do you ever like leave?
I'll be honest with you. So I'm an Aries sun and a Sagittarius rising.
Nice.
I do have some fire in me. And when I get scared, I get this like other personality that comes through where it's like, except for Lizzie Borden House, I was very scared and I just sat there. But then eventually I got up the courage and then just like, for lack of a better term, like I broed my way out of there. I was like, hey, bro, I'm going to come through here. And just kind of like toughed it out and just brought on this entirely different persona. So I suppose that would be like, I don't know, like went in a different headspace and like wasn't my normal self. I approach it like a bull in a china shop. Like I'm just like, I just go for it because I still get very scared sometimes. Mm. Yeah, not all the time. A lot of paranormal investigators won't admit this, but a lot of the time it's not very active. There's a lot, especially on an 8-hour investigation, there's a lot of sitting around in a room and nothing's happening. So then when something does happen, it can be very startling. I'm getting better at it. I'm getting better at sitting there and waiting and listening and not leaving. But if I do have to walk through it, then I turn into Zach Bagans. No, not really. I don't yell at it. I'm never disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Well, because if I believe that these ghosts aren't really the spirits of deceased people, I believe that they're in some form a reflection of myself or myself looking in some kind of mirror, then I'm not going to disrespect it because it's there for a reason. I put myself in that position. I'm there for a reason.
Right.
So I try to face it and get something meaningful out of it.
I love that.
It's almost like, you know, the fight or flight response for you is a fight response.
Yes.
Yeah. Or it's like a square up response. I don't know how to explain it. I've like never actually really said that out loud, but like, cause it's not like, I'm not going to like punch it or anything. Like,
yeah.
But I put on a tough exterior, which is definitely not how I am in real life. So to me, that seems like an act. So I'm basically like playing a different version of myself when I get scared.
Yeah.
But it's still always confronting it. I never run except for one time, Lizzie Borden House. I slept in my car that night because I could not imagine. I couldn't fathom trying to sleep there. I have sleep paralysis normally anyway. So like I have problems with that. I was like, no, but I don't run. Other than that, I never run. I always try to see it out. I try to see what happens, you know, That's why I'm there.
So these days, do you kind of get phone calls to investigate? Do you kind of initiate your own investigations? Like what's kind of the nature of your work?
Locally, I do get people reaching out through social media to have me investigate. I also know a lot of people just in the community in general, a lot of different professionals and different people who once they hear or find out that I'm into the paranormal, they have somewhere that they want me to go. Mm-hmm. So locally, people are reaching out to me. But other than that, there are locations that I still will pay to go. I'm going somewhere tomorrow night that I pay to go to. Or sometimes I'll do it with friends for fun or I don't know. Locally, I do private investigations and sometimes residential investigations, but I wouldn't necessarily like identify myself with that because I have to vet that very carefully. I'm not doing that all the time for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's something you have to be super careful about. If anyone listening is into paranormal investigation, you have to be very careful for a number of reasons when investigating at a person's home, but I'll do it under the right circumstances. So these days it looks like a smattering of local private investigations and some paid investigations or like famous locations.
Mm-hmm.
To that point, do you have any particular like protective practices, whether towards spirits or humans?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. So I do have my own spiritual practice. I have a working relationship with my ancestors and some guides that took me a really long time to kind of establish. And for a while there, I was actively working on protection for myself from people mostly. People freak me out, like living people, mm-hmm. you know, and I would work a lot on protection, and honestly, maybe to a point of like obsession. Like I was like, I got to make sure my wards are up. I got to make sure I'm cleansing. I got to make sure this and that, like following all of these rules and things to make sure I was protected. But in the last year, I'd say specifically since the beginning of last year, I went through a really traumatic event beginning of last year. Like I was in this gang shooting. Jump scare. Sorry. I know. I'm sorry. It was random, but it's like relevant because it changed my life, you know?
Yeah.
I'm fine physically, but wasn't fine emotionally. And that moment, that was January of last year, it kind of shifted, not just because of that specifically dangerous situation, but it shifted my spiritual practice in a way to where I felt really protected more naturally. So I guess I've kind of entered a space where I have a really good relationship with the spirits that I work with, and I feel more protected so that like on the day-to-day by working on that relationship with them. And so I don't do as much specifically. I just kind of trust that I am protected. I love to wear protective jewelry. That's something I really like. My grandma made me this ring out of her and her best friend's own jewelry. And, you know, I feel like that's really embedded with a lot of like ancestral or like family energy. And yeah, I have like I have wards up in my house to help me out. But as far as on investigations, I don't really do anything in particular. Actually, more often than not, you'll see me preparing for investigations by upping my ability to connect with the other side. So I'll typically maybe bring some crystals that will help with communication. Mm-hmm. Or I'll wear an oil that helps with spirit communication, like something like that. So it's really quite the opposite. I'm like trying to open myself up more rather than protect myself because I know I got backup at home, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, now I have to ask, what are some of the crystals and either herb-based oils or whatever else you use that are conducive to this kind of work?
Yeah. So labradorite is great. I mean, amethyst is basic, but I love it. Ruby and zoisite is something I've really liked. Kyanite is something cool because that helps with communication.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love kyanite.
Yeah. And what else? I do have a tiny, tiny piece of moldavite, which is cool sometimes, but it's sort of wacky energy. What else? Clear quartz. Again, these really popular ones are popular for a reason. You know, they're great.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, those are typically the ones that are in my bag. I put them all together in a little bag for spirit communication. Then I have another little bag for protection, another one for abundance, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the oils, I've cycled through a bunch of different kinds of oils. Right now, I'm using an oil by my friend Beyond. mediums.com, I think, and he makes a really cool spirit oil. And then sometimes I'll work with mugwort. Mugwort's like my best herbal ally for spirit communication. That's something that makes me feel very close to the other side. So yeah, I think that would be about it.
Love that. Talk to us a little bit more about, you mentioned earlier, you know, the other side for you is kind of anything from like cryptids to UFOs. If you're comfortable, yeah, talk to us a little bit more about that. What do you think about that?
All of that. I personally believe if I'm going to believe in one, I kind of need to be open to believing in all of it. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've been working on over the last few years because I used to be very like, oh, yes, this, but not this. Like I'd be like, not Sasquatch or not fairies. You know, like also when I started to learn about other people's cultures, other religious beliefs, when my worldview started to expand too, I started to develop a different sense of respect and understanding for where these stories come from and what they mean and how they can manifest in life today. So I really believe that they all coexist together in some way, shape, or form, but I don't know that they are necessarily legitimately defined in the way that we define them today. Like, especially when it comes to aliens, UFOs, Sasquatch. Sasquatch lore, I've really become softened to over the years, especially living in Washington. You guys know Pacific Northwest, super huge here.
Yep.
But again, kind of understanding the different cultural like opinions on Sasquatch and having some friends who have given me, you know, their stories about Sasquatch and what it means to them and their families and their families' families. Like, it's like made me really respect that as like legitimate phenomenon. So the alien thing, the UFO stuff, I struggle with that. Not that I don't think think that it's possible, but I just don't think it's anything like what is in media, what we're seeing today. And now we know that it's really crazy. Just go on Twitter and like search UFO Twitter for a second. You'll know what I'm talking about. But like, yeah, so that gets kind of weird, you know, but I try to be respectful and understand that.
Yeah.
I just would hate to just be in my own little ghost world and be like nothing else, you know, like I just really believe it all has to coexist in some way or another.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated on the UFO front as well. And I think one of the things that I would like to see is us expanding our definition, because there are so many different life forms, even just on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
You can go to the bottom of the sea and find basically an alien there, right? Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
While I don't discount the fact that there could be humanoids, it's like, well, what else could there be?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Our planet is not the only planet that can sustain life. And I think that because we're so, you know, our humanness limits us to our own understanding of our own world and our own natural environment, life could look like something completely different
mm-hmm.
somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my... the way that I look at things.
Yeah.
Speaking of media and popular culture, I think so many of these sort of spiritual topics are kind of becoming not, I don't want to use the word mainstream, but like just kind of more acceptable and people are more interested in talking about them. You know, what do you make of that? And do you think there's kind of stuff out there that gets it right?
Yeah, it's hard. I'm a part of it. I can't ignore the part I have to play in paranormal media. I have somewhat significant following on Instagram and TikTok and things like that. And I'm making content for people. So I don't know. I think it's good that some of it is becoming mainstream. I also don't think it necessarily had anything to do with creators or TV or anything like that. I think it more had to do with like 2020 and all of us going through a collective trauma together. And like,
mm-hmm.
I think we're starting to see the implications of that spiritually and see where people are looking for something more and looking for like more understanding of life. And
mm-hmm.
anyway, I'm okay with it. But of course, there is a lot out there that I don't necessarily agree with,
yeah.
especially the ones that keep it more about demons, you know, more Christian centric. I think it's a bit closed off, and that can be really frustrating. But I believe there are people out there that are doing it right. I mean, if anyone's seen Hellier, the series Hellier, done by Greg and Dana Newkirk and their crew of people, if anyone listening wants to look that up, that is a group of people who have very similar beliefs to what I'm talking about. And I really love what they're doing and just kind of being more accepting of all the different types of weird there is out there. And as far as like TV goes, I love Amy Bruni and Kindred Spirits, that show, and those people. I went on an event on a trip with her event company last summer called Strange Escapes, and it was very cool and very nice people with a lot of integrity and a lot of kindness.
Awesome.
And that's what I look for in paranormal media. It's just general kindness. We need, as we all know, we really need a lot more of that. And so I'm just kind of not really here for the aggressive, sort of nasty approach to it in media. But as a whole, I have no problem with paranormal media or mainstream paranormal stuff.
Yeah. I think integrity is the thing that really I value. And I think that that's sometimes it can be hard to discern like what is sort of being done for show, if you will, or like what is being done from a place of integrity and authenticity and really meant to educate people and meant to open people's minds, as opposed to like, here's a crazy cool trick or a cool thing that I'm going to do or that I'm going to show you. And I'm getting paid like hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it.
Yeah, it's so tough. Like you, especially with the rise in TikTok or specifically like short form video,
mm-hmm.
is tough because there's more nuance there. It's like I recognize as a paranormal creator, I recognize that sometimes people have to make content that is a little shallow in order to reach a wider audience,
mm-hmm.
in order to then get a bigger idea or concept or thing through. And so that I can understand. But there are definitely creators out there who are only using the paranormal as an avenue for fame and success. And I'm not super down with that, but I don't lose sleep over it. I'm like, it is what it is. And I personally believe that it ebbs and flows. I mean, I've been into it since the 2000s. You know, we've already seen it ebb and flow in the media. So I think we're just in a flow right now. And then it'll die down and then it'll be something else. I don't know. Then it'll be like weird, like demon aliens or something. I'm sure it'll just get crazier. I'm very much a person that, maybe this is my astrology again, I'm very much a person that's along for the ride, but I attempt to maintain my integrity and don't participate necessarily. But I'm also like, let's see what happens. This is crazy. You know, like, I don't know. Paranormal media is wild.
Yeah.
Paranormal TikTok.
Well, kind of to that point, one thing we've really noticed and learned a lot while, you know, researching the paranormal investigative field, it's very male-centric or male-driven, I should say. So what's it like to be a woman working in this field?
It's difficult. And I would definitely agree that it is still very male-dominated, or rather, like, also a more masculine approach is more popular too, which is really hard. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll see that reflected in the lineups on conventions, and you'll see that reflected in views and followers and just little comments online. Like, it's everywhere. And it's hard, but it's helped a lot to maintain the right community around myself, especially online. And I have a lot of friends who are really challenging that. And I have friends who are non-binary trying to challenge that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all sorts of different people. And if I continue to keep myself surrounded by them and feel safe with them, it definitely makes that an easier time. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely happening. And anyone who tries to tell you differently is benefiting from the way that it is and is afraid to challenge it. But luckily, I am seeing on the fringe, I'm seeing people try to challenge it and turn it in a different direction, which is really exciting.
Love to hear it.
Very. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's next for you, Amanda? What's kind of on the horizon for you?
Of course, I'm really excited for my documentary to come out, Death is With Me. While I'm waiting for that to happen, right now I am working on, I'm trying not to give too much away, but I'm working on a book of some sort. It's not a book, but I'm working on something that hopefully people can have at home on investigations with them. And I'm just working on my paranormal emotive touch point theory and kind of growing an understanding and awareness of that online. So I will be online for the rest of my life, probably. No, indefinitely.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. But yeah, so those are some things I'm working on in the short term. I'm waiting for that documentary to come out, working on my theories that I have, and hopefully getting a book together soon. So yeah.
Awesome. That's so exciting. I cannot wait to read it. I am in love with your blog. It's so nice to read. You're a brilliant writer already, so I'm sure that your collective work, whenever that makes its way into the world, will also be really excellent.
Thank you. Thank you.
I love it.
Yeah. So where can our listeners find you in the world if they are interested in following you, learning more about your theories and what you're working on?
I can be found at Pretty FN Spooky on all social media platforms. That's Pretty FN, not the real word, just FN Spooky. And then I'm also at prettyfnspooky.com. And then you can find more about my documentary, Death is With Me, at deathiswithme.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been such an amazing conversation. I really appreciate your perspective, Amanda, and yeah, everything that you have offered to the world.
It's been really enlightening. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That's it for our show today, listeners. And as always, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you heard today, you can find and follow The Outer Known on any platform where you get your podcasts. Keep the conversation going by joining us on social media. We are at Outer Known Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Our home for all things Outer Known is our website, outerknownpod.com. Today's episode was edited by Jackie Peterson and produced by Lane Collins and Jackie Peterson. Our theme music is by the ever-talented Smoke Benito, and our cover artwork is by Eric Centeno. Until next time, stay magical.